Good morning, everyone. It's so great that we have to say settle down because we all like each other. We're talky-talky. So I just want to, this is just a regular Sunday, but I just want to give you a little heads up what we're doing because it's a touch different. Who is here for the Prison Project presentation? Okay, so this is kind of similar where I just wanted to bring some things to the center as presentations to show you what we do here because the Prison Project has like 20 volunteers or more. And the children's program and family camp together have more than 40 volunteers. So if you don't know that one little piece of information, that's kind of shocking because that's like a small business. So it's just amazing. So I wanted people to understand what we do just to see how many people are on these teams. It's kind of shocking. So today we have a presentation from the children's program and family camp to show you what's going on, and they're going to, a little interactive. I don't know everything they're doing, but I trust it will be wonderful. So here it is.
Yeah, I love it. Keep that habit up for the rest of your life. Sit in front. Okay, so there's been a little. I'm a little bit confused because I talked for the first session with a lot of help from people from family camp and the children's program, and for this session I just get to be pretty much a witness, so although I'm sure I'll have something that I have to say. So if people could turn to page 183 in their prayer book, we are going to begin by saying Shakyamuni Buddha's mantra 7 times. And I would appreciate it if everybody chimes in immediately because I have a terrible voice. Taya ta mune mune maha munae soha. Taya ta page turn to page 34. We're going to say the four measurables in English. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. And then if you turn to page 37 at the bottom, we're going to say Chenrezig's mantra 8 times and Green Tara mantras 7 times. And while we're doing that, please remember all of the people on our prayer list. Things got a little busy today, and I didn't read it before we started. And also, please keep in mind, there have been several deaths of family members at the center. Just to mention Bernard Baranski, Chris Baranski's dad. Chris is our chief techno guru and does untiring hours here, and he's in Indiana with his family. So if you could keep all of those people in mind, I'd be very grateful. Om Mani Padme Hum, 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 Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Tari Tu Tari Tu Re Soha. 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 Tari tu tari tu re so ha. Om tari tu tari tu re so ha. And the children can go to their classes. Sorry, no story today. And
I think you just need to go like
it. Okay. Have a good time, guys. Hi, Olivia. Thanks, Carol.
Oh, yeah, I know who that is.
So, no, you can use this microphone, but before we get started, could we just take a, since the theme today is family camp and the children's program, but the, kind of the bigger theme is community. So in the spirit of that, can everybody just take a minute and, wow, Gompa got empty after all the kids left. And take a minute and introduce yourselves to each other, and I'd appreciate that. And I'm going to pass the mic to Erin. Oh, oops, she's powered.
Is mine on? Yeah. Do I look really awesome? Do I look cool? I use my... All right. Okay, if you're still meeting new friends, you can meet like one more friend and then we'll wrap it up. Andre's going to meet everybody. I don't know one either. I think we're settling down. We could do it anyway, just for... That's really quiet. That was quiet. Good morning. All right. I like the energy of introducing themselves and feeling lively and awake. I have a PowerPoint presentation, but it turns out it doesn't really, our system wasn't going to keep up with that. So I'm Erin Sloan. I'm the Children's Program Coordinator. And one huge endeavor of the Children's Program is Family Camp. We pulled it off like 2 years ago, pretty small, and wonderful this year due to Christy and Karen. So they're going to talk just about the Family Camp part. And I'm going to talk basically about the Sunday school program. I've been coming here a long time, over 10 years. I started volunteering for the children's program when we moved into this building, which was like 8 years ago. And for about 4.5 years, I've been coordinating. But this children's program, the Sunday school program, all these kids that come and go, it started maybe like 15 years ago with people like Donna Cease and Susan Potter just trying to put something together and working and working and working. And a huge effort came when we came into this building with Valerie Jones and Denise Flora. So we have them to thank, and also the kindness of our volunteers. Our Sunday morning volunteers, there's 32 current active volunteers. Everybody doing at least once a month. The generosity of the center to give us space and a foundation of inspired materials, which we have with the 16 guidelines, and a huge amount of support from, that's what's messing up. Okay. Stop breathing. Stop shaking, maybe that would help. A huge amount of support from our resident teacher, Geshe Gellick, and also from Geshe Songpo now as he joins us, from our center director, Robbie Watkins, and from our spiritual program coordinators. They've always been huge advocates for the children. And I think one thing we want to kind of think about is how, you know, the children's program's not separate, but how we're all a community of raising, of working on ourselves, of helping each other as adults, helping the children. I mean, for us to get where we want to go with wise and compassionate beings, it's a great place to start when they're young. So I think that benefits all of us. The curriculum we work with is called the 16 Guidelines, and you guys might have been exposed to that in different ways. I had a picture, but I'm not going to go into that really. It uses secular language and character traits, so it's really easy for anybody to kind of come in and teach. It's familiar. You can talk about patience, and people know the word, and it helps me get volunteers because they're comfortable talking about patience where they might not be comfortable talking about specific Buddhist terms. Geshe Gellick actually handed a book to Denise Flora, an early version of the 16 Guidelines, more than a dozen years ago, and said, maybe this would be useful. And she created a guide for us called Ready, Set, Happy, which we use in our program. And it's very valuable to us. So I said the 16 Guidelines were secular, but we're a Buddhist center. The brilliant thing about the 16 Guidelines is that they are all Dharma. I don't want to get the quote wrong, but I didn't look up what exactly I wrote down, but Geshe Gellick said something one time along the lines of Dharma is what motivates us or inspires us to do positive action. Do you think that'd be a good definition of, I'm just looking at you, Kandala, of Dharma being something that motivates us towards positive action. Using those secular terms, humility, patience, contentment, delight, all of those work as well for Dharma. We have, for our volunteers, part of this is kind of talking about volunteerism as a community. We start a volunteer year in September, so we started this year. We had a big meeting for all the different age groups. We got together. We talked about how do we support the kids, how do we keep them safe, how do we work together to help ourselves develop, to help the program develop, and then we're off and running until the next August. Your volunteer commitment is technically over, but I kind of beg you to continue in the program because we need a lot of help. about halfway through the year, we celebrate all our efforts and we talk about how we are using this opportunity to volunteer to develop ourselves and develop our own generosity and our service to the center and make connections. And if we haven't been doing that, we make more effort to do that. I like to tell people it's a great way to interact and engage with the curriculum that your kids are learning. So I'm going to pause for a moment. If you've ever volunteered for the children's program in any way, will you raise your hand? All right, I got a lot of you. Yes. Does anyone want to say what they like about volunteering or why they volunteer? Or why you would never volunteer again? That's okay. All right. Do we have a microphone?
Hi, my name is Virginia. Is it on? Oh, okay. Real close. My name is Virginia, and I've been coming for about a year and a half with my daughter, who is five now, and I wanted her to have a basis to begin with her journey, spiritual journey, and I wanted to come for myself, and I was thrilled that there was a children's program. It's really what brought me here, and so soon after we started, I got the word that they were looking for volunteers, and I thought it was a wonderful opportunity to be involved with my child's, you know, just see what the program was like and be able to talk with her about it. And I found it's been a wonderful way to just be a part of the community. I feel like it's really been, I've met some wonderful people and I feel really connected with everybody, and I love just giving. It's a way that I can give financially. It hasn't always been a opportunity for me to be giving in that way, and this gives me an opportunity to give and be part of it. So I've really enjoyed it and I love it. So,
and we all benefit from people like Virginia, who are art teachers and experienced and make special things for us to hold our markers in and bring fresh ideas and positive energy. So the whole community, I think, benefits when people get involved. Anybody else? Yeah, we'll take one. That's good.
Going to the mundane. Am I on?
Not yet. Oh, there I am. Okay. It's fun. It helps my fun meter go up. And I am a real believer that my practice is supported by keeping my fun meter at a certain level. So I encourage everyone to, in whatever way you can, keep your fun meter up, and children's program is a great way to do it. Thank you.
Thank you. We have a couple different classes. So we have a preschool class, what we call a preschool class, here that's still in this main building. It's ages 0 through age 4. We don't get a lot of the real little ones. But what we do in that class, our goal is to provide safety for kids, kind of keep them happy. It's got to be in the front. Okay. And, you know, create a loving environment for them. We want to encourage mindfulness and sharing. One of our other really great volunteers, Vivian, helped us kind of create some guidelines for the classroom, and she pointed out things like, when we teach the kids to, when they want something, give an asking hand instead of a grabbing hand, it changes so much in my interaction with you. If I'm like, may I have a turn with that versus mine, you know. So we try to do little things like that just to encourage, you know, good cooperation skills. And, you know, she pointed out, you know, doing things one at a time really is something that cultivates mindfulness. So we're always like, okay, we can do this, this, and this all at the same time, and it'll be so much more effective. But helping the kids slow down and do one thing and then the next thing is really good for them. So our preschool room is super sweet. Our elementary class, we have two elementary classes out there. We're really wanting them to start to get to know the guidelines, what the names of them are, what those things mean. Kind of get the sense that when we help other people, it kind of helps us feel better, get a little bit of experience with that. We have Ready, Set, Happy Guide. We have a library of lesson plans online
And I went and looked at the one for thoughtful speech just to get an example. So in classes, we get to do things like this. Like we read a book called My Mouth is a Volcano. And it's very, you know, colorful. And this little kid has this really hard time holding in his words and not interrupting people all the time. And he has some breathing techniques. So we get to practice the breathing techniques. We get to build with blocks. But we turn it into a cooperative game where we are really watching our speech and learning to cultivate respect for what other people's choices are in the building and taking it slow and being careful about what we say. We had sound bingo because listening is a great way to think about how we become thoughtful with our speech. So we might have a piece of paper that has our bingo card. I think Christy's done this one, where you have lightning and bowling and a lion. And you wouldn't think all those things sound the same, but you really have to listen and play. And we make that cooperative as well. Christy had a great idea during Thoughtful Speech. We had a book that where strawberries were kind of a main character, and she brought in strawberries and let the kids draw with the strawberries. So they're really getting interactive with their connection to the story and making a mess and being really connected. And so that's a better reminder for them of how to, of what the story was about. There's more. We love books in this class, and I love picture books. So I try to find ones that I think have Dharma lessons in them, even though this is like, you don't find this under your Dharma section. It's a reading rainbow book. And we did this with kindergarten and first. And I tell them that the first page is a little bit intense for some of you, but don't worry. You get to make the choice at the end. So it's a kid, and I don't know if you can really see it, but I kind of point out he doesn't look too happy. He doesn't look like he's really like a happy guy. And here's what he's saying to the ant. It's a conversation between the kid and the ant. Hey, little ant down in the crack, can you hear me? Can you talk back? See my shoe? Can you see that? Well, now it's going to squish you flat. Not a happy thought, but this happens all the time on the playground, so we can talk about it, right? And then the ant starts to have a conversation back. He says, wait, please don't squish me. I'm like you. And we get to see how big the guy is compared to the ant. But the ant keeps working. He's like, no, I'm like you. I'm going to convince you that we're the same. You have your family life. When I go down into my little crack, I'm just like you. I have my little ant life, too. We, you know, miniature scale, but we're just like you. And so the book goes on, and what this particular one I like is it doesn't tell you what happens in the end. It says, should the ant get squished? Should the ant go free? It's up to the kid, not up to me, the author. We'll leave the kid with that raised-up shoe. What do you think that kid should do? So it's a great opening to have a conversation with kids about how they think about other beings way down to the little ants. And a lot of times kids really connect with animals, and they can really use this as an example. And, of course, I'm thinking of equanimity and how we can kind of start treating all creatures the same as ourselves and start to see similarities. Venerable Khanda was talking earlier about community and, you know, seeing the whole world as our community is a great thing for kids at this age. And, again, I just love books to try to do that. This is another fun one, Enemy Pie. This kid has a best friend, and another kid moves into the neighborhood. That new kid becomes his best friend's friend, and so he's feeling a little threatened. And so he decides that kid's his enemy. He's never had an enemy before, but now he has one. So his number one enemy is Jeremy Ross, and he tells his dad about it. His dad's like, you know what, no problem. I can get rid of enemies. I have this thing called enemy pie. Trust me, we'll work on this together. I'll start making the pie. Go play. Come back. I'll tell you a little bit more. So the kid goes and plays, and he comes back. He still doesn't really know what enemy pie is, but his dad's like, trust me, you're going to have to do a little work. And here's what the dad says to the kid. He said, there's one part of enemy pie that I can't do. In order for it to work, you need to spend a day with your enemy. Even worse, you have to be nice to him. It's not easy, but that's the only way enemy pie can work. Are you sure you want to go through with this? The kid's not sure, but he goes through with it. He
goes over to the kid's house. He talks to them. They play balloons. They play basketball. They jump on the trampoline. The kid teaches them how to use a boomerang. Gets to the end. He even gets him up in his treehouse, the place where he had his number one enemy list, where no kids were going to come. So this kid was not going to come up there. He gets down to dinner. The dad makes some macaroni and cheese, and then it's time for enemy pie. And the kid's now like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if I want to give this guy I've been spending the day with this enemy pie. What's it going to do to him? It's going to be a lot of trouble, right? The dad eats it, and then the kid eats it. Does anyone want to guess the best way to get rid of your enemy? Give him pie. What else? How are you going to get rid of your enemies? Make friends with them, exactly. So the kids can figure that out, but they're kind of on the edge of their seat going, what's going to happen? So it just kind of shows you that friend, enemy, stranger is kind of in our mind, right? And a lot of times when we really get to know people, we can forge friendships with them. We have more in common with them than we think. And kids can start to look at it, I think, through experiences like this. So that's what we do a lot in elementary. Play the games, read the books. High school, attendance is up and down with high school. We had a meeting recently and came up with a great goal in offering instructions for the teens to live a meaningful and happy life by presenting Buddhist principles, tools and methods in an engaging way. So getting more into the Buddhist terminology. So we have some really knowledgeable volunteers. I think Don Brown's out there right now leading our Dharma discussion with our teens, our high schoolers, and that's wonderful. We're going to keep developing that program. Middle school is last because it's kind of in between. So what to do with our middle schoolers? They, maybe if they've been in this program a while, they've heard the 16 guidelines for like maybe 6 years already. So they might not need that anymore, or they need at least to add something to it. So we start to think about, you know, how do these guidelines work? Why do they work? Maybe they don't. What does science say? Is there anything in Buddhism that's saying the same thing or a different thing than we've been learning about? We try to come up with relatable topics, and every year when we ask them what they want to do, they say go outside and play games. So we try to do that. So Brian, you can show the picture. This might be something that we look at. If you ever did Hidden Picture when you were a kid, or Highlights Magazine also has Hidden Picture, this is what's wrong with this picture. So we can all look at this, and pretty quickly we see things that are wrong with it, right? How many people see 3 things wrong with it? 4. 5. 6? Yeah, at least. There's no right answer necessarily. The reason why, now find all the things that are right with that for me. How many things are right with that picture? It's not a right answer to that one either. But raise your hand if it's a little bit harder to find things that were right with it. Okay. Now, this is a crazy picture, and that's part of the reason. We could also look at this with a normal picture. Scientists say, this is what I talk about with the kids, so scientists say that evolutionarily, in an evolution, because of evolution, we kind of have a negative bias that the cavemen who were always on alert, who were, you know, looking out for predators and danger and what's wrong, those were the cavemen that survived and passed their genes on. And so we kind of, sometimes we tend to look at things like that, and it's easy for us to see what's wrong with this picture. But what if we tried to train ourselves to look at things a little bit differently? What if we looked what's right with this picture? I mean, I see a couple kids having a good time. I see a dog, you know, right in there. He's going to get a little snack. It's silly. It's colorful. I kind of wonder what's happening behind that door. That gets my imagination going. So we would talk with the kids about how do we focus on our strengths? What are our strengths? How do we develop those? And science says that the best way to cultivate a quality is by action. So if generosity is going to make you happy and you want to be generous, practice generosity. Even if you're not already generous, just do something generous, whether you mean to or not. Create that action, and then you develop that quality. And then I would look and see what Buddhism says. Venerable Chodron,
on her website talks about, in terms of karma, she says that one result of our actions is the tendency to do them again. They become habitual. So that's not that different. I don't know what the Buddha says about evolution, so I'm not going to talk to that. But she said habits create the cause again in future lives to have those kind of habits. So she's talking about reincarnation and our imprints on our mind and karma. But how's that too much different in the choices that you make every day? This is just questions for the kids. No right answer, no wrong answer. If being generous makes you happy and you're doing it to, you know, combat an evolutionary trait that you might have inherited, or you're doing it to put positive imprints in your mind stream, it could be either one, but, you know, why not give it a try if it's going to make you happy in the short term? All right. 17 minutes into my 20 minutes, doing pretty good. I have one last thing. So I don't know if anybody's going to be brave enough to do this, but I thought I'd give it a try. So like I said, the kids always want to have fun and play games. So there's a game that we played called Dolphin Training. And Dolphin Training is a game where there's a volunteer. That volunteer leaves the room. They don't need to leave the room in this case. And we, the audience, decide something that we want that person to figure out. They return and they start kind of trying to figure out what we want them to do. When they do something that's on the right track, we ding, ding, ding excitedly. When they do something that's on the wrong track, we don't say anything. So the more excited we get, the closer they get to the action, the more excited we get, the more dings we give them. So, I don't know. Is there anybody here who's brave enough to stand up here, not know what's going on, respond to us, and be just like a little bit physical, not extremely physical? Chantal, yay! All right, so if you come up here and just stand at that screen, I'm going to show, you don't need to go out of the room, just don't cheat and look at my piece of paper. We're not going to decide, I'm just going to show them what we want you to do. Yes, we are friends. Well, we'll be friends after this. It's not that bad, right? Does everybody see that? Okay. All right. Let's give it a try. So the point of this game is to not just have fun with Chantal. Go ahead. But to show us how much fun we can have by giving positive feedback. All right. So you're going to start moving. Yep. Ding, 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 ding. All right. She got it right away. So she has a background in movement, so maybe that wasn't that fair. But, you know, if she was doing this, we would have dinged just a little bit. But she went straight to jumping jacks, so yay. but we like to have a little bit of fun. So, I don't know. I wasn't really sure what to talk about for the children's program. So you got a little bit of history and a little bit of what we do in class, because I think that's more fun. So do you guys have questions about just the Sunday school part, and then we'll move on to family camp?
I have a question.
Yeah. And a mic's coming to you.
You mentioned those books, and a lot of times I go to the library and I would like to find some books. Do you think you could maybe post somewhere like a book list of?
I should totally do that.
That would be really fun.
Yeah, that would be a good idea. I'm going to commit to doing that by the end of October. All right.
I can help you.
I need
you.
A deadline.
I'm willing
you
to help.
You keep on me and help me, and we will get it done.
Okay.
Because it's lovely. I think it's a nice way to engage kids without it feeling like I'm telling you this to do this, you know, some of the more surprised ones. What else? Andre. Uh-oh. You're going to ask me a hard question, aren't you?
You know, like, I'm pretty sure, you know, kids don't live in a bubble, right? So, and then they're probably aware somewhat of what's going on. politically, socially, you know, all the stuff that's going on. I'm just wondering, how do you incorporate that in the class? Do you do that at all, or do you just...
So, like, yeah, I think that's a good, so understanding, like, what about, you know, the world, and there's hard things going on in the world, and things like that, you mean?
Yeah.
So I think those are great topics for our middle school and our high schoolers, and we definitely are, I see that very likely coming up in high school, and I think I'd love to work more on how we do that with the middle schoolers, because I think it's important for them to be able to engage in the world and understand the world through this view if it's helpful to them. But it's tricky. Yeah, you don't want to go too far with it. Okay.
Because they're going to get it either way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they do get something from the news, but sometimes something that kind of shocked me in the beginning when I started teaching on Sundays is something like, I spent the whole week in the principal's office. I'm really bummed. I'm really down. I don't want to be here right now because I feel sad. And then you have to talk to them about their feelings and just supporting them and being in the group for that hour. Like, we're all here. We all understand. Has anybody else been sad? Has anybody else been disappointed in themselves? And, you know, let's just support our friend for the next hour. And because, number one, you want them to be happy when they're here. You want them to feel safe and secure. And even if they don't want to be here, because sometimes children get brought, they don't have a choice. You know, and sometimes they do. Sometimes maybe they're the ones pushing their parents to come. Or even heavier stuff, like they might have family issues that as a teacher, you're like, I'm here to listen. And you might not have a lot to say because you don't know what to say.
Yeah, I mean, the world can get overwhelming, right? So we tend to focus on calming your mind, being in the moment, paying attention, focusing on what you can change, which is your mind, and really just slowing down. That might be as far as we really get. But just kind of being open, like starting to observe. So not giving them an answer about how to change this problem or that problem. That's not where I'm at. I mean, maybe our program can develop in that way. But let's just take a look. Let's and even just, okay, so this event seems overwhelming and it's causing this emotional reaction in me, but let's just maybe even try to separate the emotional reaction from this action and kind of see how they're separate and what that emotional reaction, what the thoughts and feelings that occurs. You know, this thought occurs, this causes this emotion. So we're more kind of breaking down those and just trying to get them to recognize that, those pieces of it. And then they're here for such a short period of their lives. They probably are going to do a lot of the analysis outside, but maybe they have the tool to go, okay, if this is making me sad or depressed, what thought made me feel this way? What action, what thing happened before that thought? And then just starting to break it down and slow it down, I think helps everything not feel so overwhelming. Good question. All right, yeah, let's move on to family camp so we don't run out of time for family camp.
Can I just say something about one of the things I think the children's program does is that about that I've in my witnessing, I haven't been in all the classes, is that they never deny that it's happening. You know, even with the very, very, very young ones, you know, because you asked originally about not just internal feelings about events that happen to them, but the hard things that happen in the world. Places are bombed and stuff. And I think one of the things that I have great respect for is the acceptance of the fact that children always know and that there's no hiding that from them and always acknowledging it. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, the children's program does a really, really good job of doing and creating a holding environment for those things that are so difficult to live with. Thanks.
Good morning. My name is Karen.
And I was just sitting here thinking about anybody who might be a newcomer. This is a little bit of a non-traditional program that we have today. And my first time at the center was in 2008, and it was a volunteer appreciation morning. And we got pizza. So we don't have pizza for you today, but we do have some finger food and snacks available after the session. But it was very inspiring for me on that day in 2008 to see a community of volunteers and a community of people coming together to try to learn the Dharma and live the Dharma. So I got involved with Family Camp about a year ago or so when Aaron asked me to work on it. And it's an event that we've done twice, so this was our second one. We did it in May, and it spans 3 days. And we used the camp facility in Fuquay Varina. We had about 85 people who came, and including 22 families from our center. And one of the things that's really unique about camp is we bring the children and the parents together to experience and live the Dharma. So it's a little different than what we do on Sundays, where the kids are in a separate program and the adults are in here. At Family Camp, we all come together in that way. And it gives us a chance to come together as Buddhist practitioners, as parents and children, to think about how Dharma affects our everyday life, everyday decisions. And it also provides us an opportunity to get to know the Sangha a little bit better and have more, so the children can interact more with the Sangha members. And finally, we really go deeper into the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, and particularly the traditions in our lineage. And we learn things like why we bow, how to do water bowls, how to set up an altar, what do things mean on the altar. And each year we focus on one particular manifestation of the Buddha. So this year our deity was Green Tara. So if you're not familiar, this big picture here is Green Tara. And we have an altar in the back with 21. And there's another picture of Green Tara. So I really thought about offering some inspiring words from Lama Zopa Rinpoche or Geshe Gelug this morning. But I kind of went Catholic this week, so I really got into the Pope. I was really inspired by Pope Francis. So what I really see him as an example of really practicing the teachings very, very deeply. And I was struck by words he said, "Let's live a revolution of tenderness." So he said that in Cuba to the Cuban people. Our revolution comes about through tenderness, through the joy which always becomes closeness and compassion, and leads us to get involved in and to serve the life of others. So he's really talking about that inner transformation, right? Not the external institutions we might need to change, but really how do we transform and have a revolution from within? And that really is the fruit of spiritual practice. And I think our process of a planning camp was really about going to that place of tenderness. See, I'm getting choked up. Really trying to embody tenderness and joy, which leads to compassion. And so that was what guided us as volunteers to try to create something really special for our families. And we relied on Green Tara. So her special quality is about compassion in action. So we really wanted to understand how do we embody Green Tara? How do we understand her? And how does that lead to action? So another important thing that we thought a lot about was who's coming. So we, and Kandala very graciously acknowledged that she, when she spoke this morning, that she realized that we wanted to make camp work for everybody who came, whatever kind of mind they had, whatever stage in their development, their gender, their developmental level, whatever people were bringing to camp, we wanted to have a place where they could feel comfortable. So that was really a guiding principle. So what you'll see, we're going to see a little video. This is the result of the process that we went through. And I want to just acknowledge the two photographers whose photos you'll see. That was Sarah Wright and Ian Worthington, who shared these images. So hopefully you'll see compassion in action.
So I'm Christy. The reason why we showed you this video is because we want to share with everyone what our community can do for us, because we always we want to serve others, but to serve others we need to give ourselves space to serve ourselves and be better within ourselves, and to give ourselves a safe place and a community that we can all feel comfortable in. That was kind of our realization. I don't think it was really our intention in the beginning, but it happened, and we were happy to see it happen. So we already talked about how the first Kadampa camp happened a couple years ago at Nolan's Farm with Aaron and Cara and Valerie, and we had about 40 people there, and this time we had almost twice that amount, or over twice that amount, which is, we anticipated the growth because of the greater services that this facility could offer for younger ones or anyone who was in a wheelchair or couldn't walk around as much, and there was air conditioning. So for some older people, we really found a facility that will welcome us back and we feel confident can host even more of our community. Because our big vision is to turn it into the Kadampa family camp, this family camp, not children under 18 family camp. Because we all want to be a part of a community, and just to give ourselves a safe place to practice together as fellow practitioners. This is an energetic camp. You could call it a retreat if you want to. It's not your typical Buddhist retreat where you're going to have a lot of time by yourself or a lot of quiet time, you know. But if you want to wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning and go to the Gamba, you could have some quiet time maybe, you know, unless a 5-year-old is up there doing water bowls with their parents. But that's kind of our big vision, and we got it, our original inspiration from a camp that's been happening for over 20 years in California. It's also an FPMT center, Vajrapani Institute. They have graciously made all sorts of resources available to us, so we're not just trying this new from the get-go. They've written a camp manual, and something that I don't think anybody said is, and going back to the Sunday morning program, is that we don't have the exact numbers on it, but we do know that in the Buddhist community, it's difficult to find a children's program that recognizes that they are practitioners as well, that they're on their own path and their own journey, and that they can learn as well. You don't have to have made a lot of mistakes in life before you are introduced to the Dharma, as I think there's a majority of our members in our group that haven't come to Buddhism until later in life. But man, what an opportunity for children in our community to have some of these, even if they don't grow up to practice them. Maybe at some point in their life, they'll have the seed in them already. So there's a lot of people in here who've helped with camp. I know we've already had a show of hands of people who have made this work, but it's not just us up here. We're just the ones who are talking for everyone. But we couldn't have done any of this without everyone pitching in their 2 cents. So through all of, you know, the leadership and everything, we've got a big plan to continue through this 8-year cycle of themes. And Geshe Gelug actually helped us choose the theme for next year. And we've already been practicing this as a community, Vajrasattva. And it's going to be a challenge to introduce this to younger minds, because there's a lot of different ways that you can introduce it, but we've taken on the challenge to try that for next May 20th through 22nd, same kind of time frame, same place. And as we said, we're hoping that everyone in the community will feel like it's a place for them. So what I want to try to do today, as you guys saw in the video, we had all sorts of sessions. We had nature sessions where we were outside and seeing all sentient beings in the pond. We had yoga and movement, story time, discussion times for the adults. And I just want to share with you the way a session might go, mostly because when I started teaching children, I realized how much I was learning myself. So hopefully you guys will all learn something or have some sort of insight. So this is what we do in every class and every session. We're going to set our intention first. So we're going to just take a moment to set a wish. You can close your eyes. For kids, that's especially important sometimes to not become distracted. So just for our time together today, our wish is to become kinder, wiser people, especially because these qualities will help us help others. And we're going to try to our very best for those short minutes to be kind and positive, cooperative, and helpful. Okay. When we were meeting with Geshe Gelug beforehand, before camp, he stressed the importance of learning Tara's mantra so that we could say it quickly at any moment. And Kandala taught us the first night about the mantra. And so I'm going to, let's pretend we've been in camp. Let's review the meaning of the Om Tari Tu Tari Turi Soha mantra. We say it every morning here. And it, in short, it means, I prostrate to the liberator, mother of all the victorious ones. So Tara is the liberator. She's the mother of the victorious ones. And the victorious ones are all the Buddhas. Let's go syllable by syllable. Om signifies Tara's pure, holy body, holy spirit, or holy mind, holy speech. I'm in the Catholic thing, too, this morning. Holy body, holy speech, holy mind. Tari means liberating from samsara, from true suffering and problems. Tutare liberates you from the eight fears, which is what our lesson is about today. Ture liberates you from disease. And soha means establishing the root of the path within your heart. So every time you say the mantra, every Sunday morning now, you'll have a little bit more understanding about what it means. Om Tari Tu Tari Ture Soha. So let's go back to those eight fears. Let's bring up that chart about the eight fears. We have a visual to help all you visual learners, maybe. Okay, we'll have to scroll up and down, I guess, a little bit, maybe. Up on this chart, you can see the external fears on the far left corner, and their corresponding internal fears in the central column, and their antidotes on the right-hand side. So as you can see, there's eight fears that relate to eight external dangers, fire, water, air. Let's see, fire. I guess if you scroll down, there's floods, which is the water. Thieves, dangerous animals, snakes, but then there they go. Yeah, being locked up, monsters. All those things. During the time of the Buddha, these were kind of like significant fears and dangers. But the real dangers, the main dangers, actually come from what's in the middle column. So ignorance, attachment, anger, jealousy, wrong views, miserliness, which is kind of like greed, I guess, and doubt. These are disturbing thoughts that are your main dangers. So when we say tutare, that's liberating yourself from the eight fears, freeing you from the causes of suffering, which is what is karma, all the arising disturbing thoughts from that. So in Buddhism, we think about two different types of fears. One is the emotional fear or panic, and the other one is a wise fear of wisdom. Like all those external fears, we try to get rid of these kinds of fears. And the middle column, the internal fears, is more of like a danger. And we need to develop our awareness of those dangers so that when we work with them and when they come up in our lives, we know what to do with them, which is why we look to the far right hand where the antidotes are. Okay, just like if you got bit by a snake, you know, you would want to get a shot of contentment, you know, to combat all that jealousy in your life. So In Buddhism, this is something we talk about more in camp. We can feel more comfortable, and you know, our 16 guidelines are more secular. That's what we learn about every week at Kadampa Center. But at Kadampa Camp, we know that we're all on the path and that we've all committed to taking teachings from the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha. So we can feel comfortable in introducing some more of these Buddhist teachings. So we know that all of our problems are a result of our actions. And what's another word for action in Buddhism? It's karma. When we're dissatisfied or selfish and we focus on how much stuff we have, that's all going to cause problems in our thinking. So we start to feel confused, unhappy, and this kind of thinking can lead to problems that don't actually seem connected to, that doesn't seem like we caused them, but in actuality, they were caused by our karma. Let's say if something bad happens to us, our iPhone gets stolen. That might mean that in our past, some sort of negative karma occurred in our lives, so some sort of past negative action. But also, just the fact that, like, we're here today, and we're in human form, and we have a mind that can understand what I'm saying, that means that you've done many, many positive actions in your previous, in your past. And this is a really positive thing that you're bringing about positive karma right now to fruition. So our theme for camp is Green Tara. And she's an enlightened being, a mother of all Buddhas, like we said in our mantra. But we don't necessarily just look to her to take away all of our problems, okay? She's just like, let's say, a math teacher. A math teacher doesn't do your problems for you, but she can give you lessons. She can give you inspiration. Like, I was once in your shoes, too. I was once a student of math, and now I'm a teacher of math. She can also give you positive, well, I guess that would also be an example of her positive thoughts, giving encouraging and positive thoughts. So we can go to Tara to learn lessons and get inspiration and help ourselves with positive thoughts. So how do we do that? We kind of go to these antidotes. So these antidotes are actually temporary antidotes, okay? Because it takes a long time to generate a permanent antidote. So these are kind of short-term antidotes in the meantime, and I can't really teach on it, but from what I've heard, that the ultimate antidote to all these inner fears is wisdom realizing emptiness and teachings on emptiness. Wisdom realizing the emptiness of inherent existence, for it sees the true nature of the self. That is empty of any permanent or independent or inherent existence. That's as much as I'm going to say about that. You'll have to ask somebody else about that. So let's talk about these temporary antidotes until then. They correspond to all these particular afflictions. And we asked Tara to save us from the danger of lions. Okay, if we go up to lions, we can see pride. Okay, we're actually calling upon our own inner Tara, the seeds of our own wisdom and compassion. And these qualities can grow inside of us and protect us from the danger of pride. So the purpose of doing a Tara practice is not to worship Tara. She's a fully enlightened being. She doesn't need our worship. She doesn't need any offerings. Bowing, making offerings, reciting mantras, that's all for us. To feel special feelings inside of our own mind. And we do these for ourselves. We do these practices to transform our attitudes so that we can develop these same kind of qualities that we see in Tara that she manifests for us. So when we talk about meditating on Tara, it isn't to worship her or worship any kind of external deity. It's to show respect for these qualities and praise these qualities and provoke us to contemplate within ourselves How can I develop these own qualities within myself? How can I transform that inner transformation? How can I transform myself to act in these ways? So that's something you guys can think about when you're saying the mantra or when you see a visualization of Tara, is not just to see a pretty image, but to actually, at the end of this, when we do our dedication, I'll ask you guys to do a little bit of a visualization about seeing yourself as Tara. If we each had this piece of paper in our hands and a pencil, I would ask you guys to draw a picture of an actual fear or danger in your life right now. But you can just imagine it in your mind right now. It could be something with your work or your friends, your health, anything that's today a problem for you. It could even be a big question that you have. You know, ignorance can be a fear or danger. If you're stuck on how to visualize it, you can think about how you feel about it. And maybe some lights or colors or something shapes will come into your mind. And now I want you to think about some of the things you might have already done about this challenge or this conflict within yourself. Maybe you've talked to somebody about it. Maybe you've read up on it, read some self-help books. Maybe you've gotten mad. Maybe you've tried to distract yourself. Maybe you've waited for it to change. So when Tara says she can help, she's reminding us of the good qualities of the Buddha, which are good qualities, like we said, that we have ourselves, that we're trying to grow stronger. So just by thinking of her, saying her name, seeing her picture, it might remind us about these good qualities and our own potential and give us some comfort and realize that we're all connected and that we're not alone. So we can look at some of the things that we know can help us, that we can develop, these antidotes. For example, knowledge. I think knowledge is next to the thieves and wrong views. Okay, sometimes we just need to learn more about a subject, get more information about what's happening, ask somebody a question, listen. And we might see something that we just didn't see before, and then the whole problem disappears. All of a sudden, it's not a problem anymore. So maybe you guys can look at this and think of your problem that you just imagined in your mind and look at the list of antidotes and see if there's any of those positive qualities that might apply to your situation. Does anybody have something that they want to share about a problem and antidote? Did they do any matching in their minds just now? Oh, good.
Yeah, my problem is I can't read those words up there. I'm sitting too far back. That's a problem a lot of us older folks share. But I guess the solution would be to sit closer up.
That's good. There you go. It's bigger. So lion and pride and humility go together. And then you see the elephant, ignorance and wisdom. Fire, right next to fire, is anger and patience. Snake is jealousy and contentment. Thieves is wrong views and knowledge. And then the being locked up is mindfulness and gratitude. Not miserliness and gratitude. And then the waters or the flood is attachment and generosity. And the end is monsters. That's doubt and confidence. So I don't think I ever got that as a problem from a kid before. But does anybody else have any thoughts they want to share on this? Did any images come into your mind?
I'm not sure where it fits, but like one of the fears that I have, you know, I don't worry so much about dying, but how I die, you know, that, you know, and so, and one of my fears is dying while driving, you know, on the road, and I don't know where that fits. What I've been trying to do to counter that is just really be careful and mindful while I'm driving, watching my speed and just using the road as my Dharma practice. You know, when someone cuts in front of me, instead of trying to hit the pedal and try to get in front of them or get angry about that, you know, I just say, well, no, it's okay, he can go, you know, and just let it go and stuff like that. But I just don't know where that fits, but yeah.
Well, thank you. I'm sure that it fits in there somewhere. You can play with the words, but that's just a guideline, too. Buddhism is full of lists of numbers of things. I'm sure that somewhere. attachment to your own life.
I see that too with attachment to your own life and being generous, letting other people go and giving, being, you know, not putting yourself first and letting the other drivers and paying attention and all of that kind of generosity to all the other drivers on the road and kind of reframing it that way. Also, if I'm in heavy traffic, I just say the Tara mantra over and over because it's calming.
Yeah, so we'll dedicate this lesson that we just learned. This is a continuation of the way that we spend all of our sessions with the kids. And then we'll turn it back over to Kandala to say her two pence. So today we've been exploring how Tara can help us with our fears, our obstacles, any challenges. So I'm just going to lead you through a visualization. You can close your eyes if you want to. This is also our dedication. So we can just breathe for a moment and settle ourselves. You can look to any of the statues up here or the wall hanging to visualize Tara in front of you. Light is radiating from her into you. This is the light of wisdom and compassion. It's healing yourselves, making you feel connected to her. And she's coming closer to your heart, and you feel contentment, confidence, connection. Loving, compassionate light from the Tara that's at your heart now is radiating out of you towards the other beings close to you and all sentient beings around you. And you see the light touch them, and you see that it brings them mental and physical ease. So we spent some time thinking about freeing our mind from fears so that we can be peaceful and calm and help each other. And when we do these positive actions, they lead to happiness, and we can share future happiness with others. So let's end this by making a wish in our minds that all beings have happiness.
Wow. Great. Thank you. Thank you very much. So if a great way to finish that dedication is you can turn to page 246 in your prayer book. We'll say Master Shanti Deva's dedication. May all beings everywhere plagued by sufferings of body and mind obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of our merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill.
May no one be afraid or be belittled with a mind known to depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find hungry, the hungry find food. May people some drink water and delicious drink. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from all their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. Before we say the long life prayers, Donna has some announcements.
Good morning. Hasn't this been fabulous? Isn't it wonderful what these guys are doing? Wow. Wow. Fabulous energy and what a wonderful example. Makes me want to go out and be fabulous.
You already are.
Thank you. Even more fabulous news, Geshe Gelick is going to be back next Sunday. And so there'll be an opportunity to offer katas to him. And also, this is just me, I think it would be really fabulous if we had an altar just drowning in flowers. So if you can bring flowers, that would be fabulous. And if not, that's also fabulous, because you're all fabulous.
And one more thing.
Okay.
I think you saw pictures of them in the slideshow. We had the opportunity to paint these satsas at family camp. And the satsa artist offered us a bunch of the small ones. So we wanted to share those with you. They're unpainted. So if you would like to stay for a little bit, you can head over to the education building. And there's a chance to paint one and take it home.
Thank you.
Oh, and we have snacks in the lobby.
Snacks. Oh, that's good. Okay, so if you turn to page 244, in the land encircled by snow mountains, you are a source of all happiness and good, all powerful, Chenrezig, Tenzin, Gyatso, please remain until samsara's ends. You who move the door some more away, who serve as the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Manjana's victorious doctrine, who masterly accomplish magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, savior of myself and others, your disciples, please, please live long. And if you go to the bottom of page 245, the one who mastered his speech at a very young age, the one with great patience who received the name Avatara, the one with great precision who spread the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa on bliss and void, Lama ornament of the yellow hat tradition, please remain until samsara's ends. And seven green Tara mantras for Geshe-la's long, happy, and healthy life. Om Tari Tu Tari Tu Re Soha. 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 Om Tari Tu Tari Tu Re Soha.
And you?
Just to finish up today, I think I'm speaking on behalf of everyone at Kadampa Center, that our children's program is an incredibly vital part of Kadampa Center. I mean, without the children's program, Kadampa Center would be a shadow of what it is today. And Kadampa Center is famous throughout the FPMT, the organization we're part of, for our children's program. They mentioned Vajrapani, but these are people who are pushing the border of what it is to educate young children in the Dharma. And they're really out there leading the way for everyone. And I just can't thank all of you enough. I think most people realize this, but Aaron and Christy and Karen and everyone else, they're completely volunteers. And the gratitude we have for them is just overwhelming. So thank you so much.
Okay.
So if we have Sand Family Camp next year and adults can come and play,
yes,
are you going to come, Robbie?
Yeah, I'll be there.
Okay. Yay! Woohoo!
And I'm going to have children by then, too.
Okay.
That's what Donna said. Yeah, if you don't have children, have some children. But any donations in the box today will go to the children's program in family camp. So if you want to support that specifically, just put some money or a check in the offering box out there. So thank you so much for the three of you here and everyone else who's made our children's program reality. It's just fantastic.